I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story.
It's getting wild here, guys.
This week, a series of protests were held throughout the Melbourne CBD, resulting in violent clashes and dozens of arrests.
Police are firing. People are throwing bottles at them. Again, it's about to descend into a war zone, maybe. Hopefully the protesters walk away from this.
This comes after the Victorian government announced restrictions on the construction industry to curb the spread of COVID-19. However, some are claiming that many of these protesters do not work in construction and instead are members of the alt-right and conspiracy theorists.
On the division there between who was a rented crowd and who wasn't, were there actual neo-Nazis in the crowd?
I believe there was. My understanding is, yes, there's a few of them anti-vaxxer activists were there who are not union members, they're not from our industry. And they're the ones.
Today, who is really behind the Melbourne protests? It's Thursday, the 23rd of September. Hey, Josh. How you going?
Hey, Laura. I'm good. How are you going?
Josh Taylor is a reporter at Guardian Australia. So, Josh, let's wind the clock back a little bit to last week. A lot has happened in that time. To when the Victorian government announced that COVID vaccines would be mandatory for construction workers. Can you tell me about this announcement and what was behind it?
So construction in Victoria has been allowed to keep going on through the lockdowns, but well, it was currently running at about 25% of the capacity. The Victorian government had been observing a lot of outbreaks within construction sites and had been warning that new rules would be brought into place. Mm. So the most recent figures that the Victorian government had given indicate that around 330 cases of COVID-19 have emerged from construction sites over about 150-180 different work sites. That is obviously adding to the caseload of COVID-19 cases in the current outbreak, so they were a bit concerned about just how far it was spreading. Mm. And there were possible cases that were seeding from metropolitan Melbourne into the regions because the workforce had been allowed to leave metropolitan Melbourne to go into regional Victoria to work.
Mm.
Then they've also done a safety blitz and they detected close to 50% of inspected work sites failing to meet the COVID safety requirements.
So that does sound pretty concerning. What did the government do?
The government effectively put the industry on notice and it prioritised thousands of Pfizer jabs for the sector and gave workers a week until the 23rd of September to get their first dose in order to be allowed on site with some medical exemptions. They also announced construction workers will be banned from crossing between regional and metro towns for work. And they ruled that tea rooms would be shut amid concerns that was where a lot of the transmission was happening.
Tea rooms is in like the lunchrooms on construction sites, is that right?
Yeah, basically where you go to have your break. It's sort of like a confined area where, you know, you're not going to get in the way of other workers and you're able to sort of relax and take a break.
So a vaccine mandate across the workforce is a big step. What was the response to this, plus the other restrictions?
So the Construction, Forestry, Mining and Energy Union, or the CFMEU, which is the main trade union for the building and construction sector, said it supported vaccines, but it didn't support vaccine mandates. And then to protest the closing of tea rooms.
Smoko in the street. Trams were blocked and traffic came to a standstill as Melbourne's construction workers put their feet up in protest.
Melbourne obviously don't want us to have our lunch sheds anymore. So if that's the case, we'll have our lunch out here every day.
Last week we saw dozens of construction workers set up tables and chairs in the middle of the road in Melbourne CBD and some inner city suburbs to protest the fact that they were no longer able to access their tea rooms.
We want our sheds back for starters. We can't even sit down for lunch.
I'm eating cold bloody food. You, Dan Andrews, thank you very much.
Mm, I imagine that would be quite a sight, but it sounds pretty peaceful, right? A peaceful protest.
Yeah, it was essentially a very peaceful and just sort of show of force type of demonstration, basically saying, you know, we're making our voices heard and making it known that we don't agree with where this policy is going, and that was the best way for them to do it. But that was not the scenes we've been seeing this week.
A melee in Melbourne. Police fire capsicum foam, desperate to contain a surging crowd of anti-lockdown protesters. A day when restrictions were relaxed slightly, marred by these violent clashes.
So over the weekend, we had an incredibly violent anti-lockdown protest. You know, there's one essentially organised every month now. And that was police getting into the fray with a lot of anti-lockdown protesters in Melbourne. And then on Monday, there were a small group of protesters gathered outside of the CFMEU headquarters in Melbourne to protest against the vaccine mandates.
Mike, in the past few minutes, it has erupted further. There have been smoke bombs let off seemingly in the foyer of the union building, and it seems there are staff there now who are using hoses trying to spray the crowd to get them back.
They were there all day, and their numbers grew and grew as the day went on. They threw bottles at Victorian Secretary John Setka and smashed the officer's door down.
Items are being thrown towards the police, so we're just going to stick back a little. There's bottles and cans being thrown at the police. So,
Paul,
okay, we're being
carried out away.
Paul, we understand you need to take care. Please, obviously, listen to the police instructions. But John Setka tried to address the crowd earlier today, and certainly.
Why the CFMEU? I thought that they were supporting the construction workers in some way.
The CFMEU has been supportive of workers when it comes to pushing back against vaccine mandates and other things, but there's definitely an element within construction workers that they haven't been as supportive on all the things that they would like. And you find that kind of in any industry. You know, the union can't be all things to all people. So while you know, the majority of workers might be happy on some things, you probably won't get absolutely everyone being happy about everything.
Mm. So, Josh, I know at the weekend that the Victorian government announced its roadmap to freedom, which I imagine they hoped would calm some people, that, you know, there was a plan out of the lockdown that Victoria is currently going through. But then just a day later, as you've just said, we've got protests that are breaching public health orders. How did the state government respond to this?
Well, it's just sort of your very typical, what I call angry Daddy Dan point, where he comes out and says he's very disappointed in everyone.
Mm.
He condemned the violence and said it would help spread the virus. He said that the best thing that people can do is get vaccinated and not protest. Yeah, it was a very sort of late night decision announced on Monday that the construction sector was going to be shut down. And so construction workers had very little notice that they were going to be basically put off work for 2 weeks.
Mm, so they shut down the construction sector. Was it because of the protest?
It wasn't directly linked to the protest, but it was about concern about case numbers and the transmission and the reduced compliance within the construction sector.
Mm. What do you mean shut down? Is this the whole construction industry across the state?
So the shutdown affects the sector in metropolitan Melbourne and other local government areas that are currently subject to lockdown restrictions, which affects about 300,000 construction workers. And then that's where we lead to Tuesday. Thousands of protesters marched in Melbourne CBD. I think, you know, if on Monday you saw maybe 500 at most there was probably anywhere between sort of 1,000 and 2,000 there on Tuesday. I won't sort of rule on whether it was peaceful or violent. There was definitely a mixture of both. There was a lot of people protesting peacefully, but there was also assaults of police officers, smashed car windows, property damage. They also blocked traffic to the Westgate Bridge, which is basically, you know, the busiest road into Melbourne.
Mm, I also saw a widely circulated video of reporters, you know, being assaulted, having things thrown at them during this protest, right?
The crowd is certainly getting bigger.
Yeah, there was a bottle thrown at the head of a Channel 7 reporter.
They're very passionate. So I've just been struck in the back of a head by a can. I'm not sure whether you saw that, mate.
You okay, Paul?
That really hurt, and I'm going to go back to you, Mike.
You could see it was bleeding from that. There was definitely some violent elements to the protest. And then on Wednesday, there was a smaller crowd gathered. They did a little bit of a cat and mouse game with the police throughout the city. There were a much larger police presence, so they were much more successful in getting them to disperse a little bit. But then around lunchtime, they headed down St. Kilda Road down towards the Shrine of Remembrance. As of recording, there's a bit of a standoff at the Shrine of Remembrance, but we'll just have to see how that goes.
Right, so it seems like it's turning into a bit of a rolling protest that seems to grow larger with each day. I can't imagine that construction unions and organisations would be happy with the types of images that were being widely shared of these protests over the past couple of days. What have they said about this?
So politicians and union leaders have been blaming far-right groups for being behind the protest and the violence that's ensued.
Some of those people in the crowd were construction workers, but others, I'm reliably informed, were fake tradies. They'd been down to the reject shop and got themselves a $2 high-vis hoodie so they could pretend they were construction.
Former Labor leader Bill Shorten said,
"There is a network of hard-right man-baby Nazis, you know, just people who just want to cause trouble, these man-babies, they want to complain about the vaccination."
And John Secker, the Victorian branch secretary of the CFMEU, blamed it on the far-right protesters, saying,
"And then they were consuming a whole heap of alcohol, and thanks to these morons, 300,000 Victorians are sitting at home for at least the next couple of weeks, could drag out even longer." And it's just tragic.
So on that part of it.
And then on the ABC on Tuesday, CFMEU General National Secretary Dave Noonan.
"There were very few of our members involved in what went on there today.
There was high-vis gear being handed out to people to make them look like construction workers, and it was an attempt to co-opt members of the union coordinated in social media groups."
A very clear attempt by anti-vax groups and indeed some extreme right neo-Nazi groups to get massive demonstrations on the streets of Melbourne.
Right, so there is a narrative forming here that this is not just a group of disaffected tradies attending the protest, but rather something else, possibly the far right. Is that true?
Well, that's what I've been looking into.
Next, who is behind these protests? So, Josh, you've been trying to get to the bottom of these claims that the far right is behind these construction protests. What was the first thing you did while reporting on this?
So there's been a building movement for quite a while around social media groups growing in picking up people who are disaffected by lockdowns and the ongoing pandemic. And so the first thing you kind of do when you see these sorts of protests is look for these groups, because it generally tends to be the same people who are organising them and promoting them. And so often they'll have like Twitter accounts or Facebook pages, and then you usually end up on Telegram pages, which is a different sort of social network that's not really as good at regulating against misinformation and things like that as Facebook and Twitter and all those ones are. So you end up looking at those services where these people sort of hang out and organise themselves.
So what is Telegram and how does it work?
So Telegram's an end-to-end encryption service. It's a bit like, you know, your other encrypted messaging apps like Signal, except you can have like groups and things like that and, you know, specific channels aligned to your interests. And if someone has a link to it, anyone can sort of apply to join and see what's going on. So it's where a lot of these far-right and anti-lockdown groups are tending to organise now, because they're not going to be subject to the same sorts of restrictions that they face on Facebook or any other of the larger platforms like that. You can have moderators who can kick it out, but the largest ones, because they're so large, they don't sort of really check who's going into them. It's important to note that within these Telegram groups, the messages don't just stay there. So a lot of the stuff that you will see in these chat groups will then be spread on Facebook or Twitter or other social media sites, and vice versa. So a lot of the content within these groups are brought over from Twitter or Facebook as well.
And what did you see being posted about the protests in these groups?
So I went back to when the Monday protests happened and had a look at how that was happening. And so that protest kicked off at around 9 a.m. outside the CFMEU offices.
What types of things have you gleaned about how that Monday protest played out via this research?
So the posters for the Monday protest were circulating in anti-lockdown groups, but Elise Thomas, who's an analyst and researcher at the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, said there's a big difference between the Monday and Tuesday protest. So she said that she wasn't aware of any good evidence that suggested the far-right groups were involved in organising the planned protest, but once the protest started, it went big in the Telegram anti-lockdown groups at around 10 a.m. So that kind of lines with what I said.
And so does it seem like that call out did influence the numbers and the development of Monday's protest?
It was about 10 a.m. when people in the chat started saying, come on, get down there. You got to like help them out. There was a bizarre list of demands posted in the chat, including that Premier Daniel Andrews had to resign and the Victorian Chief Health Officer Brett Sutton had to resign, and that vitamin C and ivermectin, which is the anti-parasitic medication right-wingers are pushing instead of COVID vaccines, also be widely distributed. I think, you know, after 10 a.m. there was a turning point where more people began turning up, and it definitely became a bit more violent and a bit more reactionary to the union leaders and things like that. So while it might have started as a construction protest and there was an element of construction workers and probably CFMEU members, it definitely grew far beyond that later in the day. And there were posts in the Telegram chat encouraging people to turn up to the Monday protest and urging them to wear high-vis regardless of whether they worked in the industry.
So that does kind of align with what some of the union leaders were saying, that people may have tried to appear like they worked in the construction industry when they didn't.
It does explain some of the numbers in the protest, but I don't think it explains everything. I think it's very complicated.
Okay, let's move on to Tuesday's protest. What have you learned about that?
Well, in contrast to Monday, Elise says it was much clearer from the start that the protest was obviously being promoted by a whole bunch of different anti-lockdown groups. I spent around 4 to 5 hours watching a live stream of the protest, which reached around 70,000 viewers at its peak on Tuesday. For a comparison, the live stream on Monday reached around 30,000 viewers, which is just a lot of people. And on that live stream, I saw a cross-section of people that were involved. Many were chanting things like, fuck the jab. And every day, which is a promise to return to protest every single day. This is not anti-vax. This is pro-human. One complained about the New World Order, which is a, you know, prominent right-wing conspiracy, while wearing a MAGA hat. Within the crowd, you could also see people waving really big Trump flags. One person identified themselves as a Proud Boy, which has been labelled a far-right group and a hate group by some organisations. I spoke to Tom Tanuki, an anti-fascist activist and researcher, and he spotted a member of the United Patriots Front, which was a right-wing group as well.
Right, so another alt-right organisation, well-known in Australia.
Yes, it's definitely one, you know, it's one of those people that you tend to see at these regular anti-lockdown protests.
So these are fairly obvious symbols and markers of the far right. I'm wondering whether these visibly far-right people that you saw made up a significant proportion of the protesters that were there that day.
There's no way to completely tell. For the most part, the thousands who gathered in, you know, yellow and orange fluoro vests were not identifiable as being aligned to any political group, save for being anti-Daniel Andrews and anti-mandatory vaccination. Some who were speaking to on the live stream said they'd been CFMEU members for decades. Others were clearly young tradies. Some high-vis gear had cement stains, while others looked like it had been worn for the first time. So the overall thing I found from watching the live stream was that many of these people do not want to be known as being far-right. Whether that means that they are or not is another thing entirely, but they wanted to be known they were just anti-mandatory vaccination, and a lot had simply turned up because they had been out of work for the day.
So it sounds like it's a little bit tough to neatly divide the different groups that turned up to this protest between far-right, concerned construction workers, anti-lockdown. There's a lot going on here.
Yeah, so the experts I spoke to said it was definitely a mixed bag. Elise Thomas said that there were people who showed up on Monday protests who were construction workers, and also others who were anti-lockdown. And there are people who are both construction workers and anti-lockdown. So it's a real mixed bag. Tom Tanuki said he thinks there is an anti-vaccination movement that is tapping into a minority of the construction industry, which is disaffected for, you know, the reasons we've already discussed, and is also anti-vax. So they're effectively tapping into that disaffection and spreading their message and getting the numbers out that way.
Right. So it sounds like anti-vax groups and far-right are mobilising here, and Victoria is just weeks away from hitting 70% double dose target and getting out of lockdown. Should we be concerned about the impact that these groups could have?
I mean, we should definitely be concerned about any protests that could lead to a potential further spread of cases of COVID-19 in the state. The Victorian branch of the Nurses Union, for example, is very concerned.
The people that stand behind me are working in full PPE, challenged to get a break themselves, challenged to get hydrated, challenged to get time to go to the bathroom.
Because it's their workforce that will ultimately be affected if these protests result in further spread of the virus and more hospitalisations and people in ICU and on ventilators.
It's not about getting on the beers too early, because there won't be beers to be had whilst you're in hospital in an ICU bed.
Daniel Andrews has been very clear that we're coming out of this on those targets, and he's acknowledged that it's really just a small minority of construction workers who are turning up. So on the same day that, you know, a couple of thousand turned up, there were 90,000 people who went and got vaccinated in Victoria. So although it's a small, very unorganised group at the moment, and they have been able to mobilise quickly and get their message out and get quite a few people out, it's still a very small minority of people.
Mm. I mean, yeah, when you compare maybe only a couple of thousand turned up to the protest to the tens of thousands that have got vaccinated, it's hard to keep those two figures in mind when you have such a visible and violent group on TV.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you constantly battle when you're reporting on this sort of stuff. You don't want to give them undue attention. And I think that's why it's important to put in context in terms of how many people were getting vaccinated the day before. But at the same time, these groups are getting very good at recruiting, and disaffection with lockdowns is real in Victoria, particularly because we know we're edging close to the world record for the number of days in lockdown. So disaffection is real. So it's important to keep an eye on how these groups are mobilising, how they're organising, and what size they're getting. So although it's not a overall large percentage of the Victorian population, it is still worth seeing how they're doing it.
Right, because you mentioned they're unorganised, but I suppose it doesn't seem that way to me. And something that I found quite alarming about this protest is the idea that there does seem like there's been some thought put into how they can latch on to this existing protest, the construction workers group. And that seems new to me.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're getting better at getting their message out and organising protests like that, but they're still not really very well organised. And, you know, all you had to do was watch the stream on Tuesday, and you'd get a sense that there's no real sort of direction there. I mean, they were literally doing two laps of the CBD before walking out to the Westgate Bridge, which is basically like a hike, and then they sung like Horses by Darryl Braithwaite there. There was no clear sort of determination about what they were actually going to do when you compare it to other protests, which are fairly well organised and constructed.
Horses, yeah!
They're not there yet in terms of organising, but that doesn't mean to say that they won't get some sort of coherence and I guess, hierarchy or organisation in the future. At the moment, they're just there to yell and make their voices heard more than anything else.
Is there also a concern that you have, you know, this large group of construction workers with genuine concerns that via the events of this week are being drawn into groups both online and in real life that do have elements of the far right, that do have more dangerous views, and we'll see this migration and growth of these groups?
Yeah, I think Tom Tanuki put it best where he said that, you know, it's very simple to say that everyone who was involved in the protest is neo-Nazis, but those disaffected construction workers are now becoming part of anti-vaccination groups, and there are neo-Nazis within those anti-vaccination groups, and they are influencing those people. So I don't think the union movement at the moment, or, you know, society more generally, really knows how best to get these people out of being susceptible to this sort of influence, particularly when, you know, everyone's locked down, can't really do anything for a couple of weeks, and a lot of people are very upset about it.
That was Josh Taylor. You can read his reporting on this at theguardian.com, and we've put some relevant links on the full story page as well. This episode was produced by Jane Lee, Ellen Leibeater, Karishma Luthria, Alison Chan, and Joe Coney, who also did the sound design. Mixing by Daniel Simo. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni, Gabrielle Jackson, and myself, Laura Mefiotes. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay. Catch you tomorrow.